Hi, how's everybody? I have to lower every microphone I ever get to, and I can't see over this computer, so I'm going to move over here. So I'm really excited to be here because although I am a journalism professor and I've been a journalist for a long time, I worked in Congress for a while as a press secretary, I've worked in the NBA, I work for the Associated Press now, but we have a huge population of agriculture students at Ohio State, and in fact, one of the significant populations that I get the great fortune to teach are agriculture communication majors. So a lot of what we talk about in relation to journalism applies to them as well as they're trying to communicate the messages that you have in relation to agriculture. So what I want to kind of share with you today are some of the opportunities and the pitfalls that we encounter and that you might encounter, because I think one of the biggest challenges is we expect people to just use social media, and we use that term a lot. But what does that mean? I mean, we don't necessarily know what social media entails. We don't know what good practices are for social media. We don't know the ramifications of bad practices in social media. So I'm wondering how many of you use social media? Okay, so do they look something like this? We've got Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and the ever-charming Snapchat. How many of you are on Snapchat? Twitter? Instagram? YouTube? And Facebook? Oh, Facebook numbers are low. Poor Mark Zuckerberg's going to be peeved. What about, how many of you know how to use it well, though, is the question. So have you seen any of these? So, what are they? Speak out. We're very interactive here. Tell me what they are.
That's WhatsApp up on the left.
Okay. So what is WhatsApp?
That's an international free texting platform.
Yeah, we often think of it as being international. It's very popular in Asia and across the developing countries. It allows you to do video and it allows you to do telephone. So it's free phone, free messaging. We also have Yik Yak on here. How many of you are on Yik Yak? Yeah, good. That's probably good you're not on Yik Yak. That's an anonymous site where you can say whatever you might be thinking. We have Kik. Kik was really big among the preteen set for a while. It's dissipated, thank God, because that was another site for a lot of online bullying. And then, of course, Vine just died. Vine was 6 seconds of video, which we don't need anymore because we are allowed to do video on Twitter. So this was a connection with Twitter to do six seconds of looping video. So the reason I give you that is because social media changes, right? And what you have to ask your students is, who do you want to be on social media? Because, in fact, who they are on social media is who they are to the outside world. And they will never in their lives make a first impression again. So I give you this example of a pretty good tweet here. I hope every single professional as a mentor is thoughtful and prompt and kind as this person. We are associated by the company we keep. That certainly is true. And I want you to compare it to that tweet, which is now legendary, because this young woman got on a plane and went to South Africa, and in the 11 hours between the time she left and the time she landed, her entire life was destroyed. She lost her job, she lost her friends, she was publicly shamed. In fact, there's a book written about it now by John Ronson about being publicly shamed. And the amount of impact that your tweets can have, positively and negatively, are pretty significant. So we have to think about this as their new permanent record, because there really is no way to escape what you put out on social media. It doesn't go away. All it takes is one tweet to be captured for it to haunt you for the rest of your natural life. The greatest example we have at Ohio State is we have a legendary football player by the name of Cardale Jones, who we all find incredibly funny and charming. And on Twitter, in his earliest days at the university, he put that he didn't come here to play school. He came here to play football. And so you'd think, okay, what's the big deal? But he ended up taking us to the national championship in 2014. And while he was winning the national championship, what could the broadcasters talk about was this tweet that he put out about how he wasn't here to play school. So it's the new resume. This is how people get to know you. There is never going to be a moment in these students' lives when someone doesn't Google them. And Google is just the most superficial search that you can do. And the things that come up in Google are going to affect whether or not they get an interview, a callback, whether people want to engage with them on other forms of social media. And if we don't teach them to represent themselves well, they're going to have a very difficult time moving forward from when we see them. And primarily, it's the new first impression. So this is how people get to know you. This is what people think about you. And that means that you can be not even necessarily the person that you are yet, but the person that you wish to be, as long as you frame yourself appropriately on social media. And you never get that second chance to make a first impression. And we have to stress that to them over and over again, because each one of them thinks, oh, this is just funny in this moment, or this is just something that we can put out today and no one will really notice it. And it's okay if I'm chugging a beer in this picture, or I'm flipping off the camera, or I'm doing something that might be borderline illegal. It really doesn't matter, except it really does matter. So I ask students constantly, how do you want the world to see you? This is a real student of mine, and this is what she tweeted out. So I capture all their, as many of their tweets as I can. I tell them I'm their Twitter fairy, and I see what they post, whether it, you know, when you have them post for class, they're usually pretty good about that. It's when you have them post outside of class that they're not quite so good. And if we're going to make them accountable for posting in class, we need to make sure that what they're doing outside of it also represents them and us in a way that's constructive. She did end up going to get a job. Who knew that she would? And this is how many people are getting screened by social media and in the framework of what they're using. So you can see percentage-wise, you know, the majority of them is after they receive an application, they're checking on social media. But then it certainly gets less so, but even right down before they make an offer. And in our office at Ohio State, we've actually had three people that we were ready to make an offer to that we did not hire because of what was on their social media. So the question is not whether or not we do social media, because this is where they communicate. And one of the most interesting things I noticed about Jason's, many things that were interesting about Jason's presentation, but that the chart that showed that their engagement with Twitter was going down, remember we saw that and he made a comment about it? The reason is that they're moving off of Twitter. And actually the number of millennials using Twitter is infinitesimal now. And everything in social media ebbs and flows depending on their age group. So people who are using Facebook are older. Why do you think that is? And that's not actually the reason. Because I don't really need to connect with my college friends on Facebook while I'm in college. I need to do it when we get past those points. Why are they on Twitter? Because they want to have a certain aspect of news, but then they realize they don't actually want news in the way that Twitter's presenting it. So now they're onto Snapchat, and now we're evolving into Snapchat stories. And Instagram has actually taken a really dramatic hit. So what we have to do is stay up to date on what they're using and be able to teach them how to do those things well. And each one that comes along for it to be that permanent record that has some significance to them. And the important part of that is we have to focus their efforts. So if we just say to them, we want you to go out and do social media, that's a recipe for failure. And if we just have them do one form of social media, the challenge is they'll get really good at one, but they're going to miss the one that comes along next. Or they're going to treat the one professionally and the other ones they're going to just treat personally. And personally and professionally are two different things. And there's different policies at play in terms of how much you do professionally versus personally. Very few people on social media want to only see you in a professional manner. They want to get some aspect of personality. On Twitter, the estimate was 70% professional, 30% personal. On Facebook, it's the reverse. Now, that ebbs and changes depending on whether you're looking at something like Instagram. But on Instagram, I don't want to be looking at pictures of you, this picture of all of us sitting here would be interesting, but that's not really a graphic picture. So we want to make sure that we have something that's engaging, and how you can engage with people is really your key to social media. So one of the things that we've done, and it kind of goes right to what Jason's study showed, is we've moved off of Twitter from an academic standpoint. We still utilize it, and they still engage with people outside. They use it for source collection. We do use it for, we live-tweeted all the debates with the idea of engaging people, and we ended up engaging people around the world with our live-tweeting of the presidential debates. But from an in-class perspective, what we use is this app. It's called Slack. Has anyone heard of that? So Slack is a free app that you can actually utilize either inside a community, or you can also welcome people outside of the community. Large-scale companies use it. 500,000-600,000 people, or our classes, we have 118 people across all of our classes. And what it enables us to do is have our own Twitter, for all intents and purposes. It's a messaging app. It's an emailing app. It allows us to share folders. It allows us to share files. It allows us to share pictures and inspiration. It allows them to talk to each other. And we actually set up separate channels, is what they call them on Slack, for each different class. So that's what you're looking at here on the left. Those are all of my classes. And then each one of them can have a subsection if they wish to. So at the top, 2221 story ideas, that's my reporting class. They put their story ideas in there. 3403 is my sports reporting class, so they put ideas. When we had a midterm, our midterm was all digital. They had to pitch me their stories on Slack. My TAs get their hours. I don't do office hours anymore. We have a writing bar, like the Genius Bar at Ohio, at the Apple Store, where people come in and get help with their writing and their technology, to be honest. And so we actually are able to separate our communities, but then we have some in here called general internships and random, which brings us all together into one large community. So, for example, every week I send them out an inspirational message, and I put that out on general, then everyone gets that. We can direct message each other. So this is my student, Ian, working on a story that he's been talking about. And so it's an app. It's also a desktop app. And it's, you can access it through the web. So when I'm in between classes and I'm walking to a different building, they're sending me messages on Slack. I'm responding to them super quickly. The fact is students don't like email anymore. Are you guys finding that? Yes, students don't respond to email anymore. And it's one of the biggest challenges at universities is we email them constantly, which is part of why they don't like it anymore. They ignore us completely. So we have to figure out ways to not only communicate with them better, but also to have them communicate with each other. And what I see on here is when we have public discussions, they're getting answers from each other. They're not even waiting for me. And they're able, and actually I had one sent out the other day, hey, your feature article's due in 30 minutes. Good luck to everybody. You guys are going to do great. I mean, they're sending each other inspirational messages. It's a real community, and that's really what social is about, right? Social media. The social isn't by accident. It's meant to build community, and this gives us a great way to do that internally. This is an example of our 2221 channel. That's my TA responding in there. The Lantern Chief, somebody asked about an AP style question, and so the editor of our newspaper came in, and we had more information here. We have different opportunities for signups, so we're constantly getting different people as we engage them in this community. We can invite outsiders in, and then they start to participate with these students at the same time. Here's an example, is a little bit closer, of our channels. These are the different files that we upload. Every week I send my students a gentle reminder. I used to send it by email. None of them ever saw it. So now I send it on Slack. And then I can also, this is the greatest feature of all, I can mute them, which is terrible. It's not terrible. So I mute them from 11 o'clock at night until 8 o'clock in the morning. And so I tell them, like, I'll respond to you any other time, but I am not responding to you then. And then if I'm in class, I also mute it so that I don't get messages. So this way, they know when they can reach me. They get a notification that says that it's muted, and then I'll get back to them as soon as I'm off.
So they try to contact you when it's shut down.
They get a little message that says she's on Do Not Disturb. Now, that's not the only thing that we use. That's something that we're using in order to build up their kind of citizenship online. And by the way, Jason, I can't see you, so if I'm at my 5 minutes, just hold your hand up. Okay, good. So we want them to build up their citizenship. And that's a way for them to be accountable to each other. It's very responsive in time. In fact, when one of them posts something that's inappropriate in any way, and I can't, nothing's been dramatic, it's the other students that police them on Slack. Because it's their community, and they want their community to be respectful and polite and constructive. So they take those messages and that learning, and then they extend it beyond that world that we have. And so one of the most focused ways that we send them out is to get them onto LinkedIn. How many of you are using LinkedIn? Now, why do you think it's important for students to use LinkedIn? Based on what I told you about the there is no longer a second chance to make a first impression. This is their resume. So this is their chance to put themselves out there as the person they wish to be. And not only that, but now they can meet and engage with people who are the people that they want to be. This is an example of my student, Gabrielle DiGiovanni, Ella, and she wants to work in broadcasting. And so she reached out to me on LinkedIn and said, I want to work in broadcasting, in sports. You know, can we talk about that? And we ended up meeting, and I said, you know who'd be a great person for you to talk with is Mallory Trelevin, who's one of our graduates who works at ESPN. So on LinkedIn, I sent a message to Mallory. I connected her with Ella, and I said, hey, the two of you really need to get together. I'd like to make this introduction. And now Ella's has an internship at ESPN based on this relationship that she has that she built on LinkedIn. Now, one of the reasons that this was so important that she had this profile is because Mallory judged her based on what she saw. And not only that, but another student reached out to me through LinkedIn. She works for Southwest Airlines. She said, we have two job openings in communication, and I want to hire an Ohio State grad. I only will look at people who have LinkedIn profiles. So I sent her the people. She looked them up, and of the five I sent to her, three of them had LinkedIn profiles, and one of them is hoofing his way to Dallas as we speak for the job that he got. So it's important that they have to do this when they graduate. That's the worst time for them to be doing it because they're desperate. We need to get them doing this at a point when they are surrounded by comfort, when they have a safety net under them, and that we can protect them in some ways from the mistakes that they might make. So, here's some examples of Ella, as I said, on BTN. This is how she kind of shows herself, which is awesome. This is her resume. Now, that's not...
Can I ask you a question as you're absolutely going through these things? We have time. Do you mind?
No.
How about consistency rates? So that's got to be... Are you going to talk... Because if you have a resume, you have a LinkedIn profile, a Twitter page, a Snapchat page, all of those can be accessed by people who are prospective employers for the students. How do you stress and teach consistency across those?
Consistency in terms of message or imagery or...
Present yourself. I mean, you keep saying first impression stuff, right? So you think, I mean, which one are they going to go through first? How much weight does someone who's going to judge you?
Well, part of it is search engine optimization. So anything that your name exists in the URL, so at that top when you type in the address to the site, if your name's up there, that increases the search engine optimization. So if someone types in Nicole Kraft, one of the first sites that comes up is my Ohio State page, which has my name in it, my LinkedIn, my website, because I own NicoleKraft.com. So we teach them that aspect of this is how you're going to get found. And so one of the first things we do is have them search for each other and set up a Google alert for themselves so that they could see any time their name may be mentioned. And then we start to build those names in a constructive way. From a consistency standpoint, we teach them to use the same image over all their social media, so, at least from the profile picture, so that even this big, and even if your name may be more common than Gabriella DiGiovanni, that someone's going to be able to know that it's you. So there's a bunch of Nicole Krafts out there, but my picture is the same across all of them. And that way people can see it. The same way you want to be professional and personal. So, this is my Twitter page. It's the same profile picture that I have on my Facebook, on my LinkedIn, on Snapchat, on Instagram, on all of them. And then you can see that's my Twitterography is what we have over here. Digital journalism professor at Ohio State, First Amendment fanatic, iBooks, iTunes U author, Bishop Watterson hockey mom, teaching plus tech equals life. So that's that aspect of professionalism and personal. You want to know something about the person that goes beyond just, I'm a professor at Ohio State, I'm a California native, and I work for the Associated Press. Like, just to put those things up there, that would be okay, but it doesn't really get people. So I get people from all walks of life who want to talk about hockey, who want to talk about, First Amendment stuff, who want to talk about AP, whatever. There's people who reach out, and that's part of how you're found on Twitter, is what you put in there. Those search terms enable Twitter to make that recommendation to someone else. That's how you get those on the side. The people that you follow and also how you identify yourself is how Twitter tries to pull people in for you. So this is an example of kind of the Twitter presence that we get together. We want them to use it professionally. So we're using it. I show them this as an example. And again, for this slide, there's no political judgment here. It's just a really good example of a cover picture and a cover page. This is how Hillary Clinton described herself on Twitter at the time that I captured this. Wife, mom, lawyer, woman, and kids advocate, floor, FLOTUS, U.S. Senator, Secretary of State, author, dog owner, hair icon, pantsuit aficionado, glass ceiling cracker, TBD. Now, that's a pretty pithy amount in, 160 characters. So, this idea of you being able to identify yourself as someone that goes beyond the pale, that's what we're looking for people to be able to do. We reach out to each other on Twitter. This is actually a screenshot from something called Hootsuite, which is how I keep track of all the different Twitter channels that we have going. Is anybody else on Hootsuite? TweetDeck is another one. This is a Twitter aggregator. So the hashtag that Jason was talking about, you can follow that on here as one of these channels here. I follow each one of my classes. These are all my classes that are up here. Each different student, as they tweet to our hashtags, they come up in here. So I see who's sending me direct messages, who's mentioning me in a message, and any other channels that I want to follow, those kind of hashtag discussions. That's how you can follow them pretty easily in one aggregate. My little friend. This moves much slower than what I'm used to. We also try to make sure that we're together even when we're not. So here's my student who was too sick to come to class. So she reaches out with us on Twitter. She follows it through the tweets that we were sending out of a guest speaker. I had another student who wrote that she was really nervous to present in class, and so I was able to engage with her. So we're using both because that's where students are. And sometimes they say things publicly on Twitter. Sometimes they don't. So if we can give them as many pathways as possible, I find that that helps us improve our communication all over the place. We also play some cool games. So this is an example of a project that we do that's we run around campus and we actually use Twitter to pitch story ideas. So it's called Pin the Tail on the Campus. So the idea is that they find their ideas, they tweet them to me, I approve them, and then they go out and they pursue them, and they have, in a two-hour class, they have that amount of time to find the location they're going on campus, tweet me the idea, get it approved, get their sources, report the story, write it, and submit it between 3 and 5 o'clock. And they have to send pictures and video at the same time. And of the last class that we did this with, I had 28 people in the class. They went out in teams of two, and we had 12 stories that were published in our award-winning newspaper by the end of this assignment. And, you know, we teach them you can get to anybody, almost anybody. So this is an example of Ron Galella. You may not know his name, but you probably know who he is. He stalked Jackie Kennedy. He's a photographer. He took that really beautiful picture of her walking across the street. He calls that windswept Jackie. He was sued for stalking her and taking pictures. He had a restraining order, et cetera. We watched his movie in my media law class, and then he started corresponding with us on Twitter as we were tweeting out about things that we saw in the movie. And then he ended up coming and visiting us and being a guest speaker in our class. So we've had several occasions like that where people have come in after they've seen our engagement on Twitter. Another one, he'd written a book called The Whore of Akron, which is after LeBron James left the Cleveland Cavaliers. We were tweeting about his Twitter account, and he hopped in his car from Cleveland and drove down that day to come visit us and hang out in class. So you never know who will show up. Here's one of my greatest accomplishments. Michael Bolton tweeted at me. So I was at a conference with Apple, and I met this really great guy who had some images of Michael Bolton, and so there's Michael Bolton tweeting at me, which is really a big thrill. You know, we have to really teach them that they're engaging with the world, and this is one of the greatest examples I have of that, is my student Nina, who tweets at Jake Tapper that she had this dream about him. Jake Tapper, of course, now on CNN, and she dreamt that he asked she asked him to teach her how to ice skate, and he said yes. So there you go. So if you wondered if Jake Tapper was a good ice skater, apparently he is, because he will come to Ohio State and teach my student how to ice skate. So I hope that this helps you kind of see some ways that you can use social media, some of the ways at least we need to think about social media. And remember, it's not just using it. You have to really be purposeful about why you're using it and how you're using it and what you want to accomplish with it. Students don't like to do things just because they're told to. They like to see that there's evidence and there's reasons behind it and that in some way it will benefit them. And I think that, you know, utilizing this not only is going to teach them how to be more present in the perception that they put out, but will also help them kind of cultivate, the experiences and the connections that they need moving beyond our walls that are very protective of them. Any questions?
Yes. So is your class social media, all the different sites, are those closed or open and searchable?
The Twitter is all open, which is why we do both. The Slack is closed unless we invite.
So whatever they're learning how to do it in that class is not searchable.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that we encountered that prompted us to go to Slack and move away from Twitter as our, we did use Twitter as our primary means of communication for a while. I actually took attendance using Twitter. And we had tons of Twitter chats, and we had two main problems. One, they were very uncomfortable with the public nature of that. And really, I'm not a big advocate of having a private and a public social media. I think social media is social by definition. And if you're going to put it out there, it's out there. And you need to be comfortable with all of it, because all it takes is for me to retweet whatever you sent me from your private account, and you're public anyway. So we want them to be comfortable making mistakes. The other thing that we had a lot of people complaining and not following them because they were engaged in Twitter chats, and they were doing things that may have appealed to one population, but not another portion of their population, and so people would stop following them if we were kind of monopolizing their Twitter streams. So, you know, as much as you try to move people back and forth with hashtags, that's still publicly on someone's timeline, and so we need to make sure that they can keep that clean and straight enough that other people will follow them.
Do you grade their interaction on Slack? Do you have a rubric for what you're looking for from them, or is that just a community to keep things rolling along? You can just, like, be Blackboard and email where you put stuff.
It's not Blackboard, and it's not graded. So I'm a big believer in learning, and I'm not a big believer in grades. So I feel like any time you put a rubric on something, you know, when we do, it matters, and it really means something, and I do that exactly 5 times in a semester. The rest of it is, this is your life. Like, this is your job. I have the great gift of teaching classes that are completely skill-based, and if you're going to want to be the person that you say you want to be in this major, this is how you need to engage with it. So Slack, we've eliminated all email in my class. This Slack has replaced email, which is the greatest gift of my life. Because even without them, I have 100 email messages waiting for me between classes. So you can imagine with 118 students how many more email messages I would have. So this allows us with real-time conversation. We don't have to deal with email. It really streamlines things. It allows them to interact with each other. And now we're using social as more of a promotional tool, and we've eliminated email. Because as I said, students don't like email. They don't want to use it. And I think within the next few years, couple years, we're going to be eliminating email even as a communication tool across the university with our students. Any other questions? Yes?
Do you give them any guidelines when you have them set up their profile?
Yeah, we actually do that as a activity in class, both their Twitter and their LinkedIn and any other social media. We actually have them set up blogs as well, so that we go through, like, this is your Twitterography and this is the picture that you want to use. And invariably, I spoke to a sorority of 400 girls, and I said, random luck, I said, hey, was somebody willing to show us their Twitter profile page? And she's like, oh, you can look at mine. And I look it up, and it's her riding another girl piggyback, and they're both flipping off the camera. I'm like, this is great. This is a gift. How do we all feel about this? So, you know, it's stupid things, though, like, don't have two people in your picture. Like, well, why? Because I don't know who you are. And so, you know, what is your point of having two people in the picture? So, you know, try to think about, what do you want to put out there? What's important to you? You know, there's a lot of people who put a Bible verse, and I completely respect that. But you have to recognize that for everything that you put out, someone is going to evaluate that. Is that how you want to be evaluated? You just need to think about it. So we're very purposeful. I don't tell them anything they can or cannot put up there. I just have them try to think about it beyond the step of, well, this is me, accept it or don't accept it. I accept you for everything that you are. Is this how you want yourself to be put out on social media? That's the biggest question. Any other questions? Thank you so much. Oh, yes, sir.
So you said you didn't hire several people in Ohio State because...
I didn't. It wasn't me. It was our department.
In university, because of what the timeline on social media. So, more technical, your HR doesn't want to
I can tell you that there are people who didn't get hired because of their social media. So, I mean, social is public. Like, there is no, I'm digging behind any doors to look for this. This is a straight Google search. And I encourage everyone who I ever meet to put out a Google alert on yourself and see what's being written about you and what comes up when you are searched for. Search for yourself on Google and see what comes up. And not just for you, but if there's someone else who has the same name. So I have the great fortune of marrying into a name of a famous lesbian activist in my hometown of Santa Cruz, California. So there are people who I've gotten calls at a newsroom where they're like, are you Nikki Craft? And I'm like, yes. They're like, the Nikki Craft? I'm like, I think so. They're like, are you going to be putting up that paper mache penis that shoots oatmeal? I'm like, hold on. I am not that person. So I need to make sure that if someone's looking for me, that they find me and that I know what it looks like and that I know what's out there. And Nicole Craft was arrested not long ago in Atlanta. So I need to know that. That's what I teach them, is that you are responsible for what you put on social media. And, you know, I don't know of an HR department that does not use social media in any job that I work at presently or did work in. For all of us.
It's the same at Ohio State.
I think we're going to have to. I don't. The university certainly has not come out and said that, but the fact is that students do not interact with email the way that we want them to. We thought it was newfangled and amazing because we had letters. They've always had email. So to them, it's just a drag. I mean, you have to open this thing up on your desktop or your phone. I got to keep track of it. I got to respond to it. They don't want to do that. They want apps. They want to be quicker. And I'll be honest, you know, one of the challenges I think Jessica and I probably both have teaching journalism, I have no idea what their jobs will be. The freshmen I meet today, I have no idea what job they're going to have in 4 years. I have no idea what technology they're going to use in 4 years. It's going to change. So we just have to keep up with where they are. One of the biggest challenges all of us have as educators is we want them to do what we tell them to do. But in fact, we have to meet them where they are now. And we have to be constantly responsive to the generation that we're dealing with, and recognize just because they're digital natives, they don't know what they're doing. They only know what they need to know for the moment that they're doing it. So we have to be responsible enough and engaged enough to be able to shape how they utilize this technology that's going to shape them for the rest of their lives. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.